Welcome to the Egyptian Streets podcast. I'm your host, Noran Morsi, writer and podcast producer at Egyptian Streets. Each week, we invite a notable Egyptian to talk with us as we explore the intersection between Egyptian identity and creative social change from an artistic, educational, or cultural perspective. Today, joining me is Dina Muhammad, artist, cartoonist, graphic novelist, graphic designer, you name it. Dina is best known for her graphic novel trilogy, Shubbeik Lubbeik, but honestly speaking, I've been a fan of her since I was in high school, since she was doing her Kahira webcomic. So I'm very excited for this chat. Stay tuned. Can you please introduce yourself?
I'm Dina Muhammad. I'm a comics artist. I've been making comics for about 7 years, and I'm also a graphic designer and illustrator, but currently I mainly work in comics. I'm currently working on a graphic novel trilogy. It's called Shubbeik Lubbeik, and it's published in Arabic.
We're going back a few years now. Can you tell us what your upbringing was like?
I've been drawing for maybe since I was about 3 years old, so my upbringing had a lot of drawing and a lot of reading. I really liked to read, and I really liked to draw. And I think those were the two things that were probably most important in making me a comics artist and sort of having the career I have today. You know, I was the kind of kid who enjoyed school for a long time. I just liked like going to school. I like being at school, which is weird. I feel like most of the things I do today would probably be not surprising for anyone who knew me as a child. Everyone just said, "Oh, Dina's probably going to be an artist," like since I was five or something. So I do feel like I was definitely not one of those people who had to like face a lot of troubles or adversity when it came to like becoming an artist or choosing to do art or even graphic design, because people just expected it of me. So I guess I was pretty lucky in that aspect.
So you mentioned that you've been drawing since you were 3 years old. When did that turn from a hobby into something you were doing professionally?
So essentially for a long time, I wasn't really sure what kind of career I would have, even as someone who draws and stuff. I would sometimes sell drawings at school. I remember at one point I was saving up for a phone, and I would do portraits of like people's moms for Mother's Day, and I would charge them for it. The portraits really weren't that good, because portraiture is actually quite difficult, but I made good money at the time. And I think my first proper like paying work for art was when I did some children's books. So I illustrated a few children's books before, like this was in school, so it was before I went to university. Wow. And then when I was in university and I was studying graphic design, that's when I started doing Kahira, which is a webcomic that I created at the time. And Kahira isn't actually, I've never made money from Kahira, because I try to make sure that I don't depend on it as a source of income. But because it kind of was surprisingly popular, and it just really, it kind of launched me into a comics career, because there were just so many people reading it. So because of that, I got so many opportunities I might not have had afterwards, or might not have had otherwise. And it ended up being super interesting, because I think what actually happened with Kahira is that it just made me more interested in comics, and it made me want to do comics, on a professional level.
Yeah.
So it's not so much that I was working, I wouldn't say I would consider myself a professional when I was doing Kahira, but I will say is that while I was doing it, it made me realize that I could work potentially in comics like for a long time. So that was probably the beginning.
So you mentioned that you kind of beat me to it. mentioned that you started Kahira in university. When did that first idea come to mind?
It was 4 a.m. and I had read like a really misogynistic article online. And it was a kind of article that was like, 10 things to look for in a Muslim wife. And it was like in a website that was run by like, I don't know, Muslim men. It was in English, but it was kind of directed at like people who live like in Muslim communities in Muslim countries. I have no idea to this day why I was reading it, but it was 4 a.m. So I guess it was just one of those things you kind of, you know, get on the internet. So I just remember, and at the time I was posting on Tumblr a lot. And Tumblr is just the kind of platform where I would just like post comics or I would post my art. And I had like a kind of a certain community and a close group of friends that I was sort of interacting with at the time. And so after I read the article, I was like, oh, I kind of want to make a comic about this. So I just made the comic, Fasaita, which was like, it was, again, it was 4 a.m. and it was, there was like no editions or process or anything. It was literally just like, brain, paper, post, not even paper, like brain, Photoshop, post. And I was just, and it was kind of the response actually that like really surprised me, because people were super, super into it. And I was, and like I said, at the time, I didn't really think about it too long. I just wanted to kind of make a sort of a, like a satirical cartoon just about, because it was a website that was made by Muslim women. So I kind of wanted it to be like a Muslim woman responding or responding as a Muslim woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of more directed towards like English speaking audience, Western audiences. But as it, what happened afterwards is that it got super popular. So I was like, oh, I like this character. I kind of want to make more stuff with this character. It's a good way of expressing, just kind of, not just the things that were bothering me, but also I felt like it was a really interesting way of sort of talking about issues that affect you in different ways. So for example, like after I made that first comic, because it had like a Muslim main character and it was in English, a lot of the people that were responding to it obviously weren't Egyptian. And it was surprising to me, like a lot of people who were like kind of Islamophobic about it, because the whole point of the comic is it was like addressing the misogyny of like Muslim men and the things they say. So it was like, I was surprised by how many people who were like, oh yeah, 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 of course Muslim men would say that like Muslims are inherently like misogynistic and backwards and blah, blah, blah. And I kind of assumed that would happen just because, you know, I've been on the internet a long time and I know things sometimes. Because of that, the next comic I made was kind of about like feminism and Islamophobia and like how those things intersect. And it was like, this was sort of the start of a steep learning curve, because I realized suddenly like, first of all, I was 18 when I was doing this. So I should probably specify. I just realized I had a lot to learn based on, I mean, when like, you know, you have like upwards of 10,000, 20,000 people responding to you, you just learn things whether you like it or not. And so I think it was very beneficial to me, because I was very opinionated and I was kind of speaking on things that were very sensitive, but things that also like, just like I had been kind of annoyed and wanting to talk about them, other people were also like full of thoughts about them. So I would say, you know, the comic changed a lot because it was just, it was a very, that's the nice thing about webcomics, in that they're a very interactive process, because they're posted like immediately and you get immediate feedback and there's like really no filter between you and who you want to see it. You can't really control your target audience. Mm-hmm. It's just whoever is interested in this like content. And I would have assumed that Egyptians wouldn't have been interested in the content, because I mean, the idea of Kahira is that she's like a female Muslim superhero, but not really a superhero in the sense of a Marvel superhero. It was that I was using superhero tropes to talk about like social issues and just basically kind of using the stuff of like heroism and villainy, and making fun of like American superhero tropes. Even though I like superheroes, but that wasn't really the purpose of the webcomic. So it was an interesting thing for me. And when I made the third comic, which talked about sexual harassment, a lot of people were like, oh, you need to do this in Arabic. Because it was set in Egypt, and I was really talking about sexual harassment in Egypt, but I thought it was interesting. And when I was doing it in English, there were still like literally hundreds of thousands of people responding to it outside Egypt. Like, it was a very relatable topic for a lot of people, a lot of women, especially like all over the world. But so when I translated it to Arabic, it really took off in like the Egyptian internet kind of sphere. And I was like, oh, Ada, I didn't realize an Egyptians would like it. I would have thought they would have thought it was kind of corny. And also, I don't know if I would have made the character the same, even if it was, you know, if it was made for Egyptians, I probably wouldn't have conceptualized it the same way. So I felt kind of bad when it was being translated. I didn't want to make translated content. So that was kind of the beginning of me wanting to be like, oh, if I'm going to make comics, and if there's people who will actually read it and like it, then maybe I want to make comics in Arabic for like an Egyptian audience. So it's kind of the beginning of my graphic novel journey.
So that's great. That leads me into my next question. Since Kohira was your first entrance into the graphic novel world in Egypt, which I imagine at the time was pretty small, in the comics world, was there a moment where you realized when Kohira got a bit big, that like this is something you can pursue and that people are, you're getting recognition for it?
So I mean, I guess for me that moment would be when it was like on like the Daily Beast and the BBC and like trending on Tumblr, and I was like, there's like, I think it was at some point I had like a visitor counter on my website on like the Tumblr page, and there were like 2,000 people online at once, like looking at the comic. So I was like, oh, okay. So there's like people looking at this. Okay. And I think, I mean, honestly, back then it was very strange. It was, the concept of virality in general to me is really, really strange. But I do remember, I knew it was strange because basically one of the things that was happening is that I was doing it anonymously. So no one actually knew I was making this comic. So I would be like on Facebook and all of my friends would be sharing it and they wouldn't know that I had done it. So I was like, huh. Okay. So this is like in a lot of places. And I think like at some point it was like being taught for like at university where I was like studying, but I was like not in the same classes. I just knew that there were professors who were teaching it because they would email me about it. And I was just like, oh yeah, I think at that point it was a very, very strange time for me. it was definitely in a lot of places, but I actually was a little frustrated by that because, this was something I tried to talk about in some of the comics, and I felt like, I really felt like it was being reduced sort of to like, oh, there's a Muslim superhero. And it felt like a lot of the reaction to it was just like, can you imagine a Muslim superhero? Like, it was just like the idea of like, the first thing people would say is that like, oh, it breaks stereotypes. And then they would just keep saying that. And they would just say, oh, this is about breaking stereotypes and breaking taboos in like the Middle East and stuff. And I think once you reach a certain point, you start to realize, oh, I don't think they're actually that interested in the content of the comic. I think they just care that it's like, it's me making it. I felt like one of the reasons it was anonymous was because I actually felt uncomfortable with like the amount of attention that was being directed as like, oh, a Muslim woman speaks out about like Muslim issues, because it was as if people didn't realize that, you know, Muslim women or Egyptian women in general have obviously been speaking out about things since like the dawn of time because we exist.
Exactly. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Moving on to Shabik Lubik. So you've published two books so far in your trilogy, Shabik Lubik. I've read both of them and I love them. So can you tell us more about that? Was it also a 4 a.m. idea?
all my ideas are 4 a.m. ideas, but besides that, actually, with Shabik Lubik, what was happening is, like I said, I had just been doing Qahira, and for my thesis, I actually decided to research graphic novels, like the history of graphic novels in Egypt, because I was realizing, like, again, purely through like all the work that the Cairo Comics and Tuk Tuk people had been doing, I just realized that we had a really long history of Egyptian comics, and it was really interesting. So I wanted, I basically just had to research like Egyptian comics since like the 1800s. And as I was doing it, I was like, oh man, I really want to do something that kind of is a tribute to this legacy. Like, I wanted to do something with the knowledge I now had as someone who was now more interested in comics and more interested in just making comics for Egyptians. And sort of what was happening was, Inanna, I wanted to do a graphic novel, specifically just because I had already been doing like short form comics. I had already been doing web comics. So I felt like I had kind of experienced that aspect of like publishing. And I had also experienced like kind of like a super virality. And I would say like one of the things it taught me in it, because like I said, Qahira is such a, like, it's such a kind of a difficult project because I grew with every comic I made. So I felt like every time I finished a Qahira comic, I was always like, oh, I can do better than this. I can do better than this. And so I realized what I was aiming for with Shubik Lubik is that I wanted to do something I would actually be proud of and content with, as opposed to aiming for it to reach as many people as possible. Like I realized in that kind of like popularity was sort of useless if you're not super happy with what you're doing. Yeah, I mean, with the acknowledgement in mind that you can't really control any of that, and either way, it's all a learning experience. So yeah, so with Shabik Lubik, what happened was, and then I was like, so I started out with the idea of I want to do a graphic novel, I want to do it in print, I want to do it bil Arabi, I want to publish it from us. Like, I want it to just be a book that people can go to a bookshop and buy. That was like my entire goal, and that was what I was trying to aim for, because I was realizing in Nahna we have such a long history of comics, just like Hatam and Samir and Miki and stuff that was generally available and it was really mainstream and widespread, but now comics are super indie. So what I was trying to go for was actually to find a way to make a comic that would just be sold in a bookstore, because even stuff like Tuk Tuk, which is amazing and super good, it's really hard to buy because it's usually like in these indie places in Wusta Balad, in like downtown, and it's because it's distributed by like these artists who are kind of having to do it all by themselves. So yeah, so that was my first goal. And then I was like, oh, well, when I was thinking of the graphic novel and what it would be about, I was actually just thinking, I was mostly interested in it. It started out with like the idea of a kushk, because a kushk is like a kiosk, for those of you who can't speak Arabic, or like a corner store, bodega. And so I was interested in the idea of kushk elikshik. I feel really weird saying kushk. I'm sorry. I was just interested in that because I find them super interesting because they're basically anywhere you go. Everywhere you go in Egypt, there's always someone who's selling, like, you know, a fridge that's full of like Pepsi or Coke. And I also just find it super interesting because Cairo, to me in general, it's got a certain aesthetic where it's very gloomy and kind of dusty and brown, which is, you know, sorry to de-romanticize Cairo, but see, like Medinat Nasr aesthetic, you know, it's like ugly. But you have these kushks, which are super duper colorful all the time. Like anywhere you go, there's always a kushk and it's so full of colors. But it's also, it's not really a natural kind of aesthetic. It's actually just so colorful because they're selling tons of stuff that's branded and all of these different brand identities in these different colors. And that kind of got me started on thinking of, like, what if a kushk, what if you could buy like something magical from a kushk? And then what if that thing is like super commercialized? Because really for me, a kushk is like, it's like just capitalism. at its finest, basically. It's just like you really can find the kushk anywhere in Egypt. And I was just thinking, oh, what if you could like buy a magical item from a kushk? And I was like, oh, what if it's a wish? And then I started kind of expanding this world from there. And I love doing that stuff because I used to read a lot of books when I was younger. But I already kind of have this predisposition in me is to just like take an idea to the extreme. So when I was like, oh, like if people are selling wishes, then, you know, what kind of world is it where people can buy and sell wishes? And what does it mean if you can buy and sell a wish like from a kushk? That would mean it's super, super commonplace and cheap. But then if wishes are commonplace, like I started thinking about like, oh, they would have to be different price points for like the more efficient wishes would be more expensive. And then I just really wanted to think of like how this would work in like Egypt specifically. And yeah, it was just like world building from there. And the first part of Shubik Lubik sort of has this guide at the end of the book about like how the history of this world and like how wishes work and just all this stuff. And for me, that was like probably one of the first things I actually started with, like just making all these notes on how this world functions. And then like starting with the story from there of like Shukri, who has like 3 first class wishes that he doesn't want to use because he thinks wishes are haram, but he also needs money. So he decides to sell them at a discount. And really what I was thinking is, and I always thought of it as a trilogy because I always wanted to have 3 different stories that show basically all aspects of this society. I feel like, you know, traditionally things about wishes tend to come in threes, you know, like 3 wishes, 3 classes of wish. So it had to be a trilogy. And I was also just thinking about like, I wanted to do sort of like to explore different aspects of what a wish means. So I feel like everything in this progressed very naturally. Because when you think about the story, it does seem kind of like big and complicated. But actually, for me, it was very simple. Is that I was just thinking about like, you know, wishes are very basic. It's based on what people want. And so for me personally, I always think that wishes are motivated either by a desire to gain something or kind of, you know, you would be motivated to regain something after a loss. And so I think like, wishes would mainly be motivated by either, you know, greed or regret. And so like each of these stories is kind of a different way of conceptualizing that. So like the first story is about regret because it's essentially, it starts after like a tragedy. So the whole story is just like a post, post tragic story. And it's really more about regret. Whereas the second story is like a desire to gain something because it's about happiness. So it's about like the desire to gain happiness. And I think I was really looking at like the most logical things people would want with wishes. So I feel like obviously if you have a world with wishes, like the number one, for me personally, at least the number one thing I would think about is loss. So that was kind of the theme of the first story. And then with the second one, I was like, oh, obviously the second most popular thing would be happiness because that's like one of the most obvious things people would wish for. So it's kind of like, basically just taking those concepts to the extreme.
For the aspiring graphic novelists, what resources would you recommend for people just getting started?
I think the good thing with graphic novels is you don't have to start with a full graphic novel. It's super difficult because the problem with graphic novels is they take a lot of time because comics take a lot of time and graphic novels are just very long comics. So if you're going to start working, I would suggest starting with small, shorter comics. And my, like, I would have like 2 separate things to talk about. So in terms of like what to read and what to consume, I would suggest, like, I feel like I learned a lot doing what I did, which was just researching the history of graphic novels, or sorry, the history of comics in Egypt in general. So I feel like, especially if you go on Sur al-Azbakiya, they have literally tons and tons and tons of old comics and graphic novels. So I would suggest just literally like reading every comic you can find. I would suggest like all of the, right now we have like a really good indie scene. So I would really, really suggest reading Tuk Tuk. I've talked about it a lot, but I would suggest reading Tuk Tuk. I would suggest reading Mitro by Magdi Shafai, who's another one of the Cairo Comics founders. And he's also been a huge inspiration for me. And Genzir as well, like his comics too. So I would suggest reading Egyptian comics artists, because those are the kind of comics, if you're going to be drawing, these are the kind of comics you can communicate with, because it's also other Egyptians who made it. Like for me, it was such a different learning experience reading a comic that was made by someone else in Egypt, as opposed to a comic that was made by someone in America who has like a totally different industry, who has like publishers, editors, colorists, letters. Like it's just a very different artistic experience. But I would also suggest reading comics and graphic novels from all over the world. You can read manga, you can read French comics, you can read American comics. There's like a bunch of websites and Facebook groups and forums that translate foreign comics to Arabic. FiaArabComics.net, they have a pretty good database of vintage Arab comics, and they also have translated foreign comics, and they're a really, really good resource. So that's part of like the consuming comics. And on the side of making comics, I would suggest, first of all, I would really suggest like once the corona situation is slightly cooler. A lot of people think it's over, but it's not. I would suggest going to workshops, going to events like Cairo Comics, just like there is like a comics community for Masr, and it's a really cool one. It's small, but it's nice. So I would suggest like joining Facebook groups with other artists. I would suggest like putting yourself out there, but starting small. Like you don't need to start straight out with a graphic novel you want to get published. You can just start by doing little web comics, because that's how most of us start. It's really how all of us did. And I would kind of suggest reading these two books that are sort of the kind of basics of comics making, and they're called Making Comics and Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud. And they're also a really, really, really good resource for like the more technical aspects of just drawing comics and making them. So I think that would be my main advice. Many main advice.
Okay, so my last question is just a very YouTube influencery question, but where can people find you and where can they buy your work?
Yeah, this is not a YouTube influencer question. This is an important question, because we need to sell books, because we need to have a comics industry. So right now, Shubik Lubik is available in lots of different places, the first part and the second part in Arabic. You can buy it from us in Egypt through Al Mahrusa's website. It's available in some bookstores, especially Nost Al Balad, the holy grail of comics. But if you want it anywhere in Egypt, all you have to do is message Al Mahrusa on their Facebook page, because they deliver now. It's on Souq, but it goes out of stock really fast. So if you find it on Souq, you can buy it. But if you don't, you can always message Al Mahrusa's Facebook page. It's also available in the US through Ma'amoul Press. They distribute it there. And in the UK through Sulqi bookstores. They have it stocked there, and they also deliver all over the UK. And it's available in Europe and a bunch of places. You can check my website, because it has all the links to like the different bookstores that are selling it throughout the US and Europe. You can also buy the first part on Google Books if you want a digital edition, but also only outside the Middle East. It's kind of messy. But like I said, all of this stuff is like on my website. But if you're in Egypt, I would just recommend messaging Mahrusa on Facebook. As for like the publishing timeline, so the books are available in Arabic, the first part and the second part. And the third part is inshallah next year. Inshallah, it's probably early next year. Kind of depends on, I don't know, we're kind of seeing how the pandemic goes, because Cairo Comics was canceled this year. And we usually try to launch during Cairo Comics, because it's like the kind of tradition, I guess. So it will probably be next year, early next year, or whenever Cairo Comics is. But also the English translation. So the English translation is is going to be published, inshallah, by Pantheon Books in the US and Granta in the UK. And also, I usually talk about this, but the only reason I can actually make 3 full graphic novels is because I sold the translation. So comics don't really make money in Egypt yet because we just don't have a big industry. So it's because I sold the translation that I was kind of able to work on it full time. That and also the residencies that really help. So it's not really an easy or any convenient career path. You just kind of have to find your ways around it. So the English translation is supposed to be all 3 books in the trilogy in 1 book. And that is also, inshallah, like probably 2021. No, that's next year. So it's probably going to be 2022 because of the pandemic. So it's been delayed a bit. But that's also happening, inshallah, like sometime soon.
And where can people find you on social media?
On social media, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, although I'm not very good at Instagram. honestly, not very good at Twitter either. The same. Here we are. And there's a Shabiklubik has a Facebook page that I recommend following for really sporadic updates about it. So there's Shabiklubik on Facebook, and then on Twitter and Instagram, I'm at It's Dinosaur. I really hate having to say that out loud. So
it's my iconic.
Friend chose this handle for me, so it's kind of stuck. So yeah, it's Dinosaur on Twitter and Instagram, and on Facebook, Shabiklubik. It's also on Goodreads. So if you read books and you review them, you should review it on Goodreads because that's fun. I like Goodreads.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much, Dina. This was such an enjoyable and informative chat. And I think I really hope the listeners enjoy it as much as I did. Thank you. And that's our episode. Thank you so much to Dina Muhammad for joining us today. This was really great. I've been a fan of Dina for many years now, and this was the first time we actually got to have a conversation, which was really fun. And I really think everyone should check out her work. And I think she's a great inspiration to people who have been interested in art or whatever form of art since they were young, and she really pursued it, and she was very serious about it. And although she's quite young, she already has 2 books out and has her 3rd one coming, and she's getting to do what she loves. And I think that should be an inspiration to us all who are trying to pursue their dreams and pursue their creative interests. Egyptian Streets is a podcast produced for the independent online publication at EgyptianStreets.com. The show is edited and produced by Noron Morsi. Production support from the Egyptian Streets team. Our theme music is The Zeppelin by Blue Dot Sessions. Tune in to the Egyptian Streets podcast every other Sunday, and don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. I'm Noron Morsi.